Support for WBFO and What's Next comes from our members and from Health Foundation for Western and Central New York, where racial and socioeconomic health equity are prioritized. Learn more about building healthier neighborhoods at hfwcny.org.
From Buffalo, Toronto Public Media, this is What's Next, an hour dedicated to amplifying the voices of marginalized and underrepresented communities across Western New York and Southern Ontario.
We cannot erase, we cannot reform, we cannot make things better if we're uncomfortable having tough conversations,
Absolutely.
If we're uncomfortable
Absolutely.
Talking about race.
What's Next carries forward our mission to engage in meaningful conversations about race, equity, and the shared concerns that deeply affect Buffalo's East Side and beyond.
Don't stop. Make those families part of your life. Their lives are part of yours. Don't stop.
Together, we dive into the real issues, striving for understanding, connection, and change.
In the suburban area, everywhere, we must work and teach our children.
Welcome to What's Next. Appreciate you stopping in. This is What's Next on Buffalo, Toronto Public Media, NPR. My name is Jay Moran. It's Martin Luther King Jr. Day here, and once again, the MLK Jr. Day of Service is returning to Buffalo's East Side today. With us to talk about two of the organizers with us, Faustini Omoro with us once again. Good to see you.
Well, good to be here, Jay. Thank you so much for having us.
Always great to have you back. And For the first time, I had a chance to meet the Reverend Ahmad Randall. Reverend.
Thank you so much for having us. I'm so excited to be here.
I'm thrilled to have you with us, sir. Director of Communications at the Elam Christian Fellowship, by the way. Let's just start with a talk about Martin Luther King. And this is going to be great because we talked about it before we went on the air, Reverend, that you are a younger Reverend. So how about from you, Martin Luther King Jr.? Talk about what he means to you and just maybe what you also hear from other people when it comes to the Dr. King.
You know, to be honest, in my generation, there is a sense of lack of reverence for Martin Luther King.
Interesting.
And the reason I go with that angle first is because there's a recency bias, right? Because each year we're getting further and further away from his work. And so the further you get away from the work, the easier you start to dissect it negatively.
Right.
And so if we put it back into its proper context, Martin Luther King was doing the best he could with what he had, with who he had. And it may not have been what we deemed in today's structure or mindset as the best course of action. It was at the time the needed course of action. And so Martin Luther King, bar none, was a fantastic preacher, a scholarly man, a resilient man, and a man who believed that America and society had a brighter future with black and brown hands involved in it.
We can reflect perhaps sometime during this conversation whether or not that has been achieved, but we'll come back to that just a little bit. But Faustino, just want for now for you, you're not quite the near Gen X we have with the Reverend here. Just like
now, I look 29, but
yes,
I am
yes, you do.
From Generation, I think, X, I guess. But for me, so that's powerful what Ahmad just said, because when I think of Dr. King, I think of when he said, I've been to the mountaintop and I've seen the promised land. Mm-hmm. So I come from a generation where I reverence my elders and my mentors walk with Dr. King.
Mm-hmm.
And so I have this soft place in my heart because for me as a leader, I've been in leadership pretty much all my life. And I know that leadership is not glamorous, right? And if you stick it out and you stick it out with the people, you're going to go through some difficult times. But I think about, because you know I'm an old school Pentecostal, so I need to say that.
Okay.
But I think about the songwriter James Cleveland, where he would say, I don't feel no ways tied. I come too far from where I started from.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody told me that the road was going to be easy, but I don't believe God brought me this far to leave me. So when I think about that and Dr. King and the struggle and civil rights and all that they had to be courageous just to stand up at that time. I mean, even now, if you put it in the context now, especially with everything that's going on,
sure,
you got to be courageous to stand up and be a lone voice sometimes in the midst of a bunch of people who are just going along to get along. So when I think about Dr. King, I still, like I said, I have the soft spot because I recognize that if he wasn't courageous and he didn't do all the things that he did, we might be steps behind.
I appreciate what you're bringing to this conversation because I think it really is worthwhile. I mean, you know, for me, I'm actually old enough to remember his death. I'm sorry to say. But for me, in that regard, he was always somebody who was very special because of it. And his, you know, I mean, there are a few orators in the history of mankind, recorded history, that compare to Dr. King for sure. That being stated, it is interesting to see how his legacy has evolved. I like what you said about, you know, it's an issue almost of recency or bias of recency. I like that. But what about, like, for you growing up then, Reverend? You know, was he somebody that, you know, was often quoted? Was he part of your experience?
Most definitely, because my uncle, Troy Bronner, he went to Colgate, which is the same seminary that Dr. Martin Luther King went to in Rochester, New York.
I did not know that. Thank you.
So he was very active in keeping his legacy and conversations alive. And his pastor, the Reverend Charles Walker, matter of fact, protested at Colgate to ensure that there would be a Black Church Studies program, which would then become the Martin Luther King Fellows, and several high profile Black preachers came out of that program. So Martin Luther King's work has been weaved into my life, into my history for quite some time. And so an understanding for me, I don't have that, you know, lack of reverence per se.
Sure.
I view what he's done in high regard. And matter of fact, he was put in an odd position, but came out with some great results. Because when you consider he was a young minister in Atlanta, Georgia, and the civil rights movement was placed in his hands unexpectedly. And then he had to navigate both life and ministry in the public eye. And then he put his life and his family's life on the line so there could be a possibility of a better future. So his work is a different story for me.
So that's, like you said, you don't lack reverence for Dr. King. But what about your peers, people around your age, people that you have had? I'm sure you have lots of conversations, right? I don't think that just in the little time that we've spent together, I got a feeling that your people are drawn to you in that regard. So what do you hear?
There is a constant comparison and a contrasting between Dr. Martin Luther King and Malcolm X.
Okay.
And so I think that my generation is becoming tiresome of playing the Mr. Nice Guy role when it comes to gathering towards the road of progression. So they believe in their minds that Malcolm X has the best path forward, which is taking the kingdom by force, to quote the Bible.
Sure.
Which I believe that that's sometimes necessary, but there has to be diplomacy while you're still being demonstrative. So you can handle it well while still fighting hard. And those are things can come together and not compare and contrast.
You're opening up some interesting things here. I don't know if we have enough time to get into all of them. Let's switch back just then. Not so much the day of service, which is in its sixth year, which is amazing, but just that the... when you see and you think of Dr. King and you think of service, talk about how you connect that and how you perhaps use him as a role model.
When I think of Dr. King, I know that he believed in service. He not only was a minister and a pastor, and he grew up in a church. Because if you grow up in church, like I told you, I'm an old school Pentecostal, all you do is provide service,
right.
whether you're on the usher board, whether you are, you know, involved in the youth, service is how we lead, especially in, I want to say, the Black church in the way I grew up. But in addition to that, Dr. King went to Morehouse College at like 15, 16.
Oh.
And then he pledged in a fraternity as an alpha where service is, you know, premier.
Mm-hmm.
So when I think of Dr. King and service, they're one and the same. And then when you look at his life, he basically put his entire life on the line for the greater good. And that for me is kind of how I see my own journey in life. And it really is the legacy of many people, because I think of my grandmother, who now has passed, who was 96 when she passed. And she said, your living will not be in vain if you do something to help others. So she instilled that in her children, and in her children, my mom and my aunties instilled that in me. And then I instilled that in my nephew. And so, and it branches out, because I think if you are a person of color or a person in general, but a person of color and you live in this society, you live your life to connect and help people, you know? And that's what I see, you know, everywhere I go. So when I think of Dr. King and service, it's one and the same.
I love the quote that you have in your media alert about Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. once said, quote, "Everybody can be great because anybody can serve."
Yes.
That is quite the thing to keep in mind.
It is.
I think there's a lot of us who think, well, what can I do?
Right.
Let's talk about what, you know, as we're speaking, we're a couple of days out from the day of service. But when people hear this on the air, it's going to be the day of service. So yeah, you guys are going to be out busy right now. So, so what are you doing? I know you're pushing close to 300 volunteers,
yes,
lots of different sites.
Yeah.
So everybody can serve. What are people going to be doing?
So this is our sixth year. And at the time that this airs, people will be at their day of service. We
right,
literally have 31 project sites.
Wow.
And like you mentioned, over 300 people out all over basically Western New York, because we branched out a little bit outside of just east side of Buffalo. And we have sites in Niagara Falls. That's new.
Sure.
Borderlining South Buffalo. And they focus on environment and decluttering and cleaning. And so people right now are finishing up their sites after helping churches and nonprofits with really some of those grunt work projects that, you know, they couldn't get to,
right,
like cleaning
right
out the basement.
Sure. Not small, right?
And then, yeah. And then amazing projects like stocking community fridges. We have a nonprofit called Rooted in Love. They're fairly new, but they give fresh fruit and food to the community. And we have people helping there. We've got people helping at the Michigan Street Baptist Church, which is one of the oldest churches in Buffalo. And they're doing, you know, helping to do the hard work. And then we've got over about 20 churches throughout the east side of Buffalo in particular that have people doing amazing projects, whether it's painting in the church. There's at least five churches that have been involved for at least 3 years. And each year they have one wanted us to paint 8 classrooms, if you can believe it.
Wow.
I know. And our volunteers did. That's the thing about the MLK Day of Service volunteers. They will do anything to help. And we tell them 2 hours. But sometimes when they get to the church or the nonprofit, they're so involved and so much into community that they literally are there for 4 hours
right,
until the job is finished. So people want to help. Even though it's a day off, people see it as a day on to provide whatever helping hands they can.
Mm-hmm. You've been at Elam Christian Fellowship. You've been talking this up. You got members. Are they going to be doing work at your church as well?
Not this year. We were in the middle of our transition.
Okay.
So we kind of shut our operations down along the passing of our pastor. But a couple of our members are involved and things like that.
All right.
Yeah.
How about you? What are you going to be busy doing?
Well, I'm going to be doing a lot of media stuff on the day.
That's right.
Right.
That's right. We talked about this a little bit beforehand,
mm-hmm,
and I just want to just highlight it a little bit. The role of social media engagement, it's everywhere, mm-hmm, of course, but
for a church,
it's, you know, I guess in some ways it looks different, but probably no different than any other company or corporation.
Right.
Or anything
you
like
know,
that.
Social media for us, the average corporation or company, is used to engage with its clientele or its consumers. It's used to boost engagement. So those things like that are still prevalent, especially in the Christian content space. However, social media has become a toxin for the church as well.
Oh.
And the reason I take that pivot to say that the church has a PR problem, and I don't mean the black church, white church, the church universal has a PR problem. And that is because we have not been good stewards of the image of the church, right? Though the Bible reminds us we are made in the image and likeness of God. Well, if the people who say they love God don't look like God, then people start to think that God looks pretty awful.
Mm.
And so the church now has a PR problem. Dr. Eric Mason from Philadelphia writes in his book, Rebranding the Church, that we have to do some diligent work in making sure that the image of the church is resemblant to the image of the church in the Bible. And that means that we have to be people who operate in service, who operate in love, who operate in kindness, who operate in humility. And so social media is good because it broadcasts our churches and it makes the message widespread. But some people and some things you don't want to see. And so some things has to be hidden behind a veil or torn down because it messaged with the PR of the church. And which means that people no longer want to be a part of something that don't look that great. And I believe that also goes back to what I said about the reverence of Dr. Martin Luther King, that we have not done well of stewarding his image and stewarding his legacy. And now he has a PR problem.
It just, again, I feel like I'm going to end up down a wormhole that I can't get out of and we're going to run out of time. But so somebody, now you're working social media, mm-hmm. That's what you're focused on. How do you try to counteract some of that toxic messaging?
Do what you're supposed to do.
Yeah.
Right. The minute that you try to do something different to counteract it, you just join it with the noise.
Okay.
So as long as you are standing strong in the image and the likeness of God, as long as you are standing strong in the biblical principles of what the church should look like, that's how you counteract the bad image.
How can someone follow you on social media?
They can find me. My name on all my handles is Ahmad Randall or Ahmad K. Randall.
Okay. Yeah. Instagram.
Instagram, Facebook.
X, yeah. Whole thing. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yes.
All right. We are talking to the Reverend Ahmad Randall this morning and also with us Faustino Moro of the Monarch of Infinite Possibilities. And we're talking about the 6th annual MLK Day of Service here in the city of Buffalo going on right now as we you hear this conversation. So hopefully if you didn't get a chance to get out this year, maybe you can do so next year or just pay. Do some random act of kindness. That'll be a nice thing for sure. Talk about the growth of this, though. What do you, it's grown. There's no doubt about it. Why?
You know, so we started 6 years ago because of the insurrection that happened. I prior to coming back home to Buffalo, which is my home, I used to work in federal level politics. And so working for a congressman and so forth. And whenever there was an inauguration that would happen, I would go to D.C., so I was supposed to go to D.C. in 2021, and I called, and no tickets, nothing is in person because of the insurrection had happened.
Okay.
So I was like, oh, I'm going to be in Buffalo on MLK Day. I always do some level of service. Let's see what's going on in Buffalo. The reality is that on the east side of Buffalo, there was no project for me to do. So I was like, I'm going to use social media, go to Facebook, see if I can get 10 people to sign up. 20 people showed up that year. And I was like, great, this was wonderful. I took my nephew with me, who was 8 at the time. And the next year, we're driving and we're in the corridor area where we had cleaned. He said, Auntie, are we going to do that cleanup project again this year? I said, you want to clean up in the community, but you don't want to clean your room? And he said, yeah, because it was fun and it helps the community. So I said, okay, if this 8-year-old nine at the time, wants to do cleanup, let's make it happen. So that year, there was a huge storm, because you know how Buffalo is in January.
Yes, I do.
But 2 weeks later, 60 people showed up. The next year, the George Floyd situation happened. 150 people packed the Michigan Baptist Street Church and gave service. So now I'm like, we're really on to something, because people really want to give back. And then we had 120, and last year we had 300 people, 22 projects. And I think it's grown because people really want to do something to give back. And like I said, we're doing real projects that are making a difference. And they may be small, like cleaning out a basement, painting the classroom, you know, helping to stuff food pantry bags or something. But people feel good And the other thing I learned is not just about the day of service. People often create community in that small time. I found out because we had a project leaders meeting, which we have every year to get them ready for the volunteers. I found out that some of the volunteers come back throughout the year to help out. They stay connected to the project sites. And so imagine that.
Right.
You go and you give your service, but the door is open for you to continue in some way that, you know, uplifts, you know, the skill set that you have. They're appreciative and it's a chance to meet new people. When we do the day of service, we have a big rally in the morning. And this year it'll be at Bethel AME Church at 8 o'clock. The doors open at 7:30. At 6:30, people are in the parking lot waiting to come in. And when they get in, we do a little engagement. We're like icebreakers for people to get to know each other. Last year, it was amazing. There were two people from Lewiston, a white guy, a black woman, who lived on the same street, never met. But when we did the icebreaker, they met. They're like, oh my God, we're neighbors.
Wow.
What's the possibility of that?
Sure.
So I think the reason people keep coming back, the reason it's growing, it's because one, they have a chance to give service. Two, they have a chance to connect with people they may never meet or that live on the same street and now they're meeting for the first time. And then three, they're making a difference. And frankly, I believe wholeheartedly at the core of all of us, we all just want a chance to make a difference in somebody's life.
It's well stated for sure. You kind of took my question for Reverend out here, but just that, you know, it seems like you're a serious individual. You've got a lot of deep thoughts about some important issues, both about what's happening here on earth and what happens beyond. When you see a day of service like this grow, does it restore? Does it your faith in the possibility for mankind?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no question. And also it exemplifies what Dr. King talks about in one of his sermons, which has now become a collection of sermons called A Knock at Midnight. He tells the parable of the man who knocks on his friend's door and he's asking for bread and he's asking persistently over and over and over again to see if the friend will give him what he needs. Truth be told is that service is not a one-time shot. It's a persistent opportunity to show up because there's always going to be someone knocking at midnight. And the reason why midnight was so very important for Dr. Martin Luther King, because he lived in midnight. He lived dwelling in the darkness of yesterday's pains, but he also waited with anticipation for tomorrow's hope. And so a lot of us are the knock at midnight. A lot of us are the friend at midnight, waiting and hoping to see if somebody will open the door. And the Martin Luther King Day of Service is us here in Buffalo opening the door for the friend who's knocking at midnight.
And then I know.
Powerful.
Faustino's giving
him the gospel
motion.
Hand.
I know.
That's a word that'll preach.
that sticks. Finally, I know you've got partners that are part of the MLK Day of Service. And most certainly, I think that everybody who's involved deserves a lot of credit, but I'm sure there's a couple that you want to mention.
Yes, thank you. Because I was like, I got to mention my sponsors. So the Buffalo Urban League, who 2 years ago saved us because we offer a free breakfast to like get our volunteers fueled up. And the Urban League said, whatever we can do. And they paid for the breakfast a couple of years ago. So they've been our legacy sponsor for a while.
Sure.
And then we have the Michigan Street African American Heritage Corridor, which when we first started, we cleaned up in the corridor and we began to be partners. So they have been, you know, invaluable to us. I am so excited to mention that Councilwoman Zanetta Everhart is in Maston District. And she has said, Faustino, whatever you need, we are here for you and truly standing on that. Then we've got legislator Lawrence Dupree, who is an amazing, amazing guy. And he said, again, whatever you need, we're here because we want to make sure this is a success. The city of Buffalo has always partnered with us because, you know, in many ways we help, you know, add value to what they're doing. And I can't forget.
There's one East Side volunteer told me once, we're doing their job. But then,
Oswaldo, I did not say that. That was Jay. I can't forget about the NAACP. I'm a member of the NAACP's Environmental Committee, and the NAACP has been invaluable. So I know we're airing after it happened, but Reverend Blue, the president, is going to be our was our MC. And he did it last year, and it's just amazing. And then Eastside Stewards is a young person who is doing the back end work for us. So all of that social media and, you know, helping us to make sure that we got the analytics down. And that has been amazing. And as you may know, this is connected to the National Day of Service. And so we are overjoyed to have such amazing sponsors help us. And, you know, my company, Monarch of Infinite Possibilities, where I focus on the environment and the arts and the faith-based community, and I connect, you know, CEOs and executives and leaders to the faith-based community. You know, my boss, she's giving me a side eye because she said, "You're doing a lot of work over here, MLK. I need you to get back to Monarch work." And when I say my boss, I'm talking about myself. So. I'm a tough cookie.
I was just going to say, boy, he can work follows you home every night.
I do want to just mention that I have this incredible committee of 20 people that are community folks. And we have over 40 different groups so far that have signed up. So it's really powerful when you think about, we have groups like Rich Products that have come in multiple years, M&T Bank that have come in multiple years, Thermo Fisher Scientific. I mean, we have people come from all over just to get involved and help on that day.
Well, they couldn't get involved if there weren't people taking a leadership role on this, and Faustina Morrow. And Reverend Ahmad Randall, thanks for what you're doing for the community on MLK Day of Service. Thanks so much.
Yes, thank you, Jay, for having us.
Coming up, Naila Ansari-Cotillo talks with Rhonda Wilson of the Buffalo Black Nurses Association. This is What's Next on Buffalo Toronto Public Media, NPR.
Buffalo Toronto Public Media, NPR, brings you trusted local journalism every day. Our reporters are in your communities covering the stories that shape Western New York and Southern Ontario. The issues, people, and decisions that matter. Add national perspective from the BBC and Here and Now, and you're connected to the larger world without losing sight of home. Stay informed with reporting that you can trust on BTPM NPR.
At Buffalo Toronto Public Media, we're committed to serving our entire community. Whether you're listening to investigative journalism on BTPM NPR, enjoying world-class performances on BTPM Classical, discovering new local artists on BTPM The Bridge, or immersing yourself in mysteries on BTPM PBS, public media has something for everyone. Explore programs that matter to you at btpm.org. This is Public Media.
From the fringes of the mainstream to the local music you love. Listen to Buffalo Toronto Public Media The Bridge Monday through Thursday, 8 p.m. to midnight on BTPM NPR at 88.7 or from your smart speaker.
You're listening to What's Next, our place to discuss the important issues of our communities of Western New York and Southern Ontario. We want to hear from you. Click on the Talk to Us option in the BTPM Listen app, and we will work to get your questions or comments on the air. Do you have a story or concern that we should be addressing? Email us using whatsnext@btpm.org. Together, we'll have the conversations that are needed. This is Buffalo Toronto Public Media, NPR.
Hello, everyone, and thank you for joining us. I'm Naila Ansari-Cotillo, and I'm honored to be here today for another episode of What's Next. And in the spirit of Sankofa, which we'll talk a little bit about more, that's an awesome conference that's coming up. We're grounding this conversation and discussion on the idea and the way we look at and reclaim wisdom, particularly in healthcare. And today we're focusing on what's next in our Black leadership, community care, and health and human services with Rhonda Wilson.
Hello, hello, hello.
Hello. So it's my pleasure to introduce you, Ms. Rhonda Wilson.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
You know, I know you're moderating a conference, which we'll talk about in a little bit, but you are also the president of Buffalo Black Nurses.
Yes.
So can you talk to us a little bit about that and what does that mean for our community? And I know that will fall right into the conference.
Oh, yeah. So Buffalo Black Nurses is a non-for-profit nursing 501c3 organization. We are a member-led organization. We service the community through mentorship and scholarship for nurses. And we were founded in 2016 by me.
That's a long time. You're going almost 10 years.
Yeah. We planted some seeds and the flowers are blooming.
That's amazing.
Yes.
And, you know, sometimes people forget how much we need nurses till they're not there.
Oh, well, if COVID ain't tell you something,
right?
Then
like, you know that's the real work that happens.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
But behind the scenes.
Oh yeah.
But on February 28th, we have from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. at the Buffalo Academy for Visual and Performing Arts, Being Black in Health and Human Services. You will be moderating that panel. So can you talk a little bit about that?
So we'll be discussing some of the issues that the Black community faces, including the economic issue with healthcare. We do know that there is a, I don't know if it's called a grant or something with the healthcare that Obama put into place, that will be ending early 2026, which would cause an increase in premiums for all, right? But it affects Black people more. Why? Because we are at the lower end of the economic, you know, status, you know, of the citizens. And that has a major impact across the board on what healthcare looks like for Black and brown people.
Yeah, especially because a lot of folks are kind of a little blindsided in general, right, with healthcare, like billing, insurance, you know, diagnoses. We're already kind of coming in at this deficit of knowing how healthcare functions, and then not knowing that this additional thing that has been helping us is being taken away is huge, particularly for our communities. When we talk about these challenges, how do you think that providers, particularly, you know, you're a leader in this world, how do you think providers can show up for our people?
Providers need to show up with unbiases. Mm. They need to show up and not see color, because a lot of our issues with healthcare is that the minute a healthcare provider comes in that doesn't look like us, there's some biases that prevent us from getting equal health care. We don't want more than anybody else. Mm-hmm. We just want fair and equal treatment when it comes to health care. So we'll be discussing what that looks like for us. We'll be discussing with there's one nurse practitioner that's going to be on. What does that look like for her when she goes into a patient's room? Mm-hmm. And I can guarantee you that when Black people show up in the nursing and medical field, that we have to do and give 110%, because when we are servicing people who don't look like us, their confidence level is not high. Mm-hmm. But we are great providers. We are great nurturers just by nature. So we'll be discussing what that looks like at a low level, because we know that this is about more than just healthcare, mm-hmm. but just at a level where people can advocate for themselves if they need to reach out to a provider and know what to ask and don't be afraid, because we're talking about health here. You only get one life. Mm-hmm. There's not a second chance. This is not a dress rehearsal. This is it.
Yes. Actually, that brings up a great point, is how do you tell folks to kind of take ownership of their healthcare? Because sometimes the language is really difficult to understand, and you feel like when you go into that room and they start mentioning stuff, and you're like, I don't know what I'm saying. I don't know, you know, I don't really know how to respond. I don't know what this means. What's the importance of asking questions and people feeling and really understanding, you know, can you please break this down to me? Because I don't know what you're saying.
One thing I can say is that with the technology we have today, you can arm yourself with great questions. Mm. You can Google anything, right? And not to say that Google is going to have the right answer,
right.
but it can lead you in the right direction to what questions you need to ask. What symptoms are you having?
Right, right.
You know what I'm saying? So if Google is telling you it may be this, 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 or this, well, guess what, doctor? It may be this, 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 or this. Or if the doctor is not telling you something that you already researched, ask the question.
Right, right.
Ask the question. And it's your time. And sometimes we get so caught up in the doctor's right. We have to throw that out.
Right. It's like you're nervous. It's like they went to school. They
went to school, but I promise you, they on that computer just right. as well, much as we are.
Well, because they're, and a lot of times people don't realize, a lot of times they're specialists. So sometimes you need multiple people to help people figure out what might be going on. Like every one person doesn't know everything. Yeah. And in fact, if someone is really arrogant like that, you should probably question.
Woo.
Right.
Yeah, look at those Google reviews.
Right,
too.
Right, right. Right. And which I think leads to a lot of people just being like, okay, well, I'm going to go WebMD, I'm going to go ChatGPT, which also is, you know, a problem because they really don't feel comfortable in those rooms and those spaces. Now, as a Black woman in health leadership, what does being Black in health and human services mean in this moment? You know, you mentioned the subsidies being, you know, taken away. And what does that mean for our community? But what does it mean for you in this moment?
In this moment, it gives us a seat at the table, right? It gives us a chance to advocate for people who look like us. Now, for me, on a day-to-day, I'm doing telephonically, but I advocate for my Black and brown people. Mm-hmm. I advocate for all my patients, but I can tell if there's a language barrier there, then guess what? It's happening in the office, too.
Mm-hmm.
So what that looks like for Black and brown providers is they depend on us, lean on us, because we are here to help you get the maximum and the best experience you can out of your healthcare. So being in this space right now, in the climate that we're in, it means a lot.
Mm-hmm.
It means a lot. Our voices need to be heard. People who are making the decisions need to come and speak to who the decisions affect. And that's people who look like us.
And, you know, speaking of people that look like us, there's not that many of us in healthcare. But one thing that we are seeing across the country, and we saw with the strike in New York City with the nurses, that there's not that many of us that are in the fields, but there is a massive shortage. Can you talk a little bit about the importance of people kind of understanding specifically nursing, right? Like there, you know, there's multiple people trying to get folks in school, but they might be a little afraid of like, what does it entail? Or, you know, do I have to, you know certain things before I go into it? What's the importance of getting our people involved in medicine?
First of all, we need you to be passionate. We need you to care about people. I know it's a bag. I know it's a bag, right? We all know it's a bag, right? But you can't go into it like that because these are people's lives.
Mm-hmm.
So are you passionate about healthcare? Are you passionate about helping people? If you are, what does that look like for you? Are you a gushy person? Do you not want to touch, you know, bodily fluids? You know, because that's important. Are you afraid of needles? Because there are so many occupations across the board where you could be a radiology tech, you know, you could be a sonographer, you know, you like to see babies. Well, you can go do ultrasounds and sonograms and all of those things that, you know, but just love it. Be passionate about it. And if you're interested, find somebody in the profession. Ask if you can shadow them or ask them what is a typical day like for them, just to see if you're interested in it. There's different levels of nursing. You have the CNAs.
Yep.
You have LPNs. You have RNs. And then you have the advanced degree nurses. Master's degrees nurses do so many different things.
Yeah. Sometimes you see them as your provider when you go in and the doctor's not available.
Yes.
You see your...
Yes. Nurse practitioners, doctor of nurse practitioner, DMPs. I'm fumbling here. And then you have also the nurse anesthetist. That's putting you to sleep when you're getting your tummy tuck.
Right.
You know? So there's things all the way across the board. You can pick whatever you want, but we just want you to love what you do. That's it.
And that's important because that's what a lot of times what a lot of people feel like is lacking is that compassion and sometimes that extra care that you need, because sometimes you can get so desensitized as a medical provider because you see things all the time, all day long, that it doesn't feel, you know, immediate all the time, like of trying to have that kind of extra sensitivity. So the Sankofa Conference centers around the Black diaspora, specifically unity. And why is unity especially important in health and human services?
We need to work together. Mm-hmm. Like, at the end of the day, when you close your eyes, if you're in a room full of people, we all breathe in the same air. We all have the same blood. There is no reason why somebody over here shouldn't be getting the same treatment. And I know sometimes with the different cultures and even with Black Americans and African Americans from other countries, there's like this little apprehension there, you know. And the bottom line is we are in healthcare for one reason. Leave all that other stuff at the door and let's come together as a unified front, because when we are, when other people look at us, they don't see no difference. You're Black.
Right, right.
I don't care where you from. You brown, I don't care where you from. So we definitely need to be a unified front all the way around, because when other people are looking at us, they don't see any difference.
Yeah. When folks come in to attend the conference, because we know it's going to be big, we know we've been out there as promoting, and it's the first conference of its kind, so I'm excited about that. I'll be there as well. What do you hope attendees walk away with at the end of the day?
I want them to be full, inspired, ready to work, you know, seeking out opportunities, not to just leave the conference and leave all the information there. Take it with you. Do something with it. If it's one thing that sticks out from the conference, dive deeper into it. Figure out how you can help make this better. Okay. There's so many things going on in the world today. The first question we need to ask ourselves is, how can we help someone else? So if you can leave the conference with that state of mind, how you can help somebody else, how you can make things better, that's the takeaway.
And it's so interesting because we talk about make things better. A lot of people don't understand the disparities in some of the stats in our own in Erie County when it comes to Black folks, particularly maternal health. Black maternal health is, you know, very, you know, very high in terms of, you know, different issues that come along with that. You bring together, you know, different leaders, nurses, artists, and advocates together. Do you think that strengthens our collective work? Because sometimes, you know, when you think medicine, you only think of medical folks that are, you know, providers. We don't necessarily think of the community as a whole. So why, especially with this conference, do you think it's important to have that collective work?
Well, you know, and our ancestors used so many different things to heal. And music is healing. Mm-hmm. Music is an art. Music is very healing. So it's important not to turn off when you hear something that you're not familiar with. You need to be open to learn more about it. There is so many different ways to heal and to be treated. And we know mental health is a huge issue in our community, but there's so many ways to deal with that untraditionally. And we need to have our eyes and ears open and ready to receive and give it a try, whatever it looks like. So collectively, you know, Black people and Africans and Afro-Americans, we all love music. We all love music. Music is an art. Drawing is an art. People heal through art. So there's nothing that can be left on the table from this conference that can't be used as a healing mechanism for our community.
Yeah. And I think that healing is really important, because sometimes some folks kind of know it in a specific kind of way, whether it's like connecting with ancestors and, you know, like it can look different ways for us. And I think that's important that we can understand that we can come into these healthcare spaces from all different, you know, modalities, from all different types of, you know, fields and ways that we understand. And it works together as a whole. How can people support this work? And also Black the Black nurses.
Well, listen, The Buffalo Black Nurses is always accepting donations and sponsorships, okay? And what that looks like for us, we do go out in the community and we do health teach. That's what we do when we go out. We teach about healthy eating. We do blood pressures. We'll talk about, you know, you being up to date on your immunizations. There is nothing that's left off the table for us within our scope of practice. For the conference, you know, keep following the conference. This won't be the last conference. There'll be other events that can be supported. And support the movement. There's a lot of great things going on in the city as it relates to Black people in healthcare. Just keep your eyes and ears open for an opportunity that might appeal to you, and don't be afraid to support it.
Yeah, because a lot of times, because of medicine, is people assume that there's a lot of money because, you know, you get millions of dollars that, you know, get thrown around of like this, you know, this group is getting 100 million, this group is getting, and it, when you divvy up how many people are actually in that cut, or what it costs for research, what it costs to actually provide for these different patients, is really not that much. And so the support is important because, you know, it looks like a lot on paper, but when you break it down, it's really not.
we have a bad rep with counting other people's money. But, you can't do that. There is so many things that's allocated. You know, you got, you know, the house bills, whatever, wherever your house, you have things like your website and all this stuff to run. You got salaries and this, and then you got a little bit left to fill the mission.
Right, right. It doesn't work the opposite way usually because the personnel costs is a lot. So
that's
everybody
a lot.
Is always is looking for that support so that we can keep providing for our community because we're not always included in those bigger budgets, right?
We are not.
Particularly when they have programs that are specific to us, especially with DEI, different things being cut funding wise is more important than ever to get that funding and get that support, which isn't always necessarily financial. It can be support coming in from other ways, even volunteering and those things. I want to look at this idea of reclaiming. So Sankofa teaches us that we have to reclaim what's left behind. What do we need to reclaim in healthcare?
Ooh.
I know that's a deep one, but
that is deep. We need to reclaim good health. We need to reclaim good health. Did you know that in some parts of Africa, you can't even get milk and cheese? That's not a part of their diet.
Right, right.
You know, we need to reclaim health, and we need to eat what is grown from the earth, more of what is grown from the earth. That is nature's medicine for us. Mm-hmm. So if we can reclaim anything, we have control over that. Mm. There's a lot of things we don't have control over. We not getting 40 acres and a mule, okay? We not getting that. So what we can reclaim is our health. It's never too late. We've seen diabetes reversed. We've seen high blood pressure control. We've seen so many things that can be reversed through diet that you can actually reclaim your health.
Yeah, it's so interesting because when people talk about that, that's where it gets that kind of back and forth of people thinking you need one over the other. And it's like, no, we actually need both to happen because you don't come to me unless something else over here hasn't been working for your diet. Right. Has to be on point because then we start to have all the, you know, blood pressure, diabetes, all those things that affect our community disproportionately because, you know, the social determinants of health, that includes everything that, you know, where you live, you know, how much, you know, money you're bringing into the community or what you can afford, whether that depends on where you can shop, you know, and it comes full circle for us. And I think sometimes we don't always put that into perspective. Is like what you do at home also determines what happens in the office.
Oh yeah,
when
for
you
sure.
have to see a provider. What changes do you hope to see in the healthcare spaces in the next few years?
I really hope that there's more of a focus on the whole person and not so much as popping pills.
Yes.
Medication has so many side effects. If we can get people to do little things first before putting them on a pill, that would be wonderful. One thing is that people have a connotation that a pill fixes things. Mm-hmm. So it's like, okay, I've seen people say, I'm a diabetic and I took my medicine so I can eat this cake.
Right, right. I was good today. Don't worry about it.
You know, I took my blood pressure medication so I could eat these chips. So I just would like more health teaching to people about the effects of their disease and more focus on nutrition, herbs and things like that, that can help people heal a lot more. Because not only are you healing internally, but like you're creating a better human being. Like, you know how much it takes for us to process all that processed food?
Right, right.
Like, yes. Your body is exhausted. Mm-hmm. How can you show up 100% if you're exhausted because you ate whatever that has whatever in it, right? I mean, I would like to see that change too. That's not in healthcare, but in our food, like, stop with all the processed stuff.
Right, right.
Like, stop with all of that because it's killing us slowly. And a lot of that stuff is what people who can't afford fresh fruits and vegetables every day eat.
And that's what a lot of people, I don't think, totally understand is like that impact, especially when it comes to glucose or diabetes and things like that. Like your kidneys, like people don't really know how it's all connected in the body, like you got to flush that out.
Yeah.
And if you're making your body work hard to flush that out, now we got some issues going on that we have to figure out. What does your role in the community play in improving health outcomes?
So for me, as the president of Buffalo Black Nurses, I created a community that supports nurses, helps them through economic challenges with scholarship. We literally pay bills. We literally pay bills. And that is because our nurses in our community, period, we don't have the resources like other communities have that can just go to school and maybe not work.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of our students may be one paycheck missed away from needing to drop out of school. So what we do at Buffalo Black Nurses is we fundraise all year round so we can help these nurses successfully complete their education without the barriers that are faced. We also show up for our community. We do turkey drives. We do book bag drives. We do anything we can to support other organizations, fulfill their missions. And we mentor other nurses and we show up in the community so they see familiar faces. And we may have a tough talk with somebody like, hey, your blood pressure is kind of high. You need to go see somebody.
Right. That's...
You know, and sometimes that blood pressure may be the only blood pressure that has been taken in a very long time because people just don't have proper health care.
Right. Yeah. And or know that, you know, hey, this is something you can also check at home. You know, or something that you need to be checking on, you know, daily for some people to see what that is.
Yeah.
So we're on what's next and what is next for Buffalo Black Nurses as the president. You could tell us what y'all got going on after the Sankofa conference.
Listen, so this year is about strategic partnerships for Buffalo Black Nurses. We are looking to grow and expand beyond and partner with other organizations, push their mission and push ours as well. So we always have our yearly gala. We have as a fundraiser, which is our highest fundraiser. That's in November. And then we have a meat raffle that's late summer, early fall. And we have a popcorn sale. I don't know when we had it, but it'll probably be soon. I won't say any dates because I don't want anybody to steal our idea. But you can find us at the conference. You can find us at the Alzheimer's Association's conference. And we'll be supporting other organizations. We are doing a maternal health. We're tabling at a maternal health event on the last Saturday of this month at the Frankie Merriweather Library. So you can find us there. Just look us up on Facebook and Instagram and follow us and come support us wherever we are.
Yes. Okay. Last question, because I know you've been I've been drilling for a little bit. The theme of the conference is Know Thyself, a call to the diaspora. What does that mean to you?
It means we have to come collectively together to make things happen, and we will. This isn't the end. This is only the beginning. I want to meet some new faces that I've never seen before and get to know some familiar faces who I may not had a conversation with. So it's basically just us really, really getting together and no more lip service. We got work to do.
We got work to do. Well, as we close, the spirit of Sankofa reminds us that our history is not something we leave behind. It's something that we carry forward. Today's What's Next conversation is a call to honor that legacy in Black leadership and health and human services. Thank you so much, Rhonda Wilson.
Thank you for having me.
You are champion and you are a leader in our community for real.
Thank you. You've been
10 years in. So I'm so excited that you're moderating this panel. I want to thank you for your leadership and your insight and your commitment to the community. And I invite you all to come to the Sankofa Conference February 28th, 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. at the Buffalo Academy for Visual and Performing Arts. Emmanuel Kulu has been, you know, putting this together. We talked to Dr. Watson, Marcus Watson as well. So we were excited of all the amazing people that will be there at the conference.
Incredible.
Yes, and we'll have a link so folks can, you know, grab onto the description as well. So, you know, get your tickets to go in.
Yes.
And enjoy this as we reflect. This has been What's Next. I'm Naila Ansari Cotillo. Until next time.
Support for WBFO and What's Next comes from our members and from Health Foundation for Western and Central New York, where racial and socioeconomic health equity are prioritized. Learn more about building healthier neighborhoods at hfwcny.org.